My name is Bob Full of Love. I'm on the faculty of Columbia University in the School of Medicine. Part of what I represent is one half of a husband and wife team. My wife and I have been doing research in AIDS and in HIV disease and in drug abuse since 1987, first in San Francisco and then here in the city of New York. I describe myself as a psychiatric epidemiologist. Forgive me for throwing so many large words at once. I mention what I mention partially because in order to get to my point, I need to throw a few numbers and facts at you. I don't want to unnecessarily confuse what I hope will be a relatively simple, straightforward argument that will leave us with a sense that there are things that we can do to overcome the litany of despair and somewhat horrific facts that we hear whenever we talk about AIDS, HIV disease, or drug abuse. But again, in order to do that, I have to string together what may be a rather complicated argument, and I want you to, if you will, be patient with me. First thing I want to point out is something that you may have seen in the New York, Times this Monday. It is related indirectly to one of Malcolm's central themes, the notion that the community ought to be independent. The article was on page B7. It talked about the fact that black people, as a group, as a whole, when surveyed, are uniformly convinced that they are the victims of a conspiracy in three different areas. The first area has to do with public officials. Yes, thank you. First is that blacks are out, that the government is out to deal with, conspire against black public officials. Secondly, that the current drug crisis is a conspiracy fostered on the community to destroy the community, and most especially its infants. And that AIDS is a man-made bug which has gotten out of control, but which was cleverly designed to specifically target members of unwanted groups, minority folk and gay folk. I won't bore you with the numbers. I think we all recognize that despite the fact that we're 11% of the population, we're almost 28% of all AIDS cases. In New York, we're almost 33% of all AIDS cases. Look at AIDS amongst women. 54% of all women who have AIDS are black women. Add Hispanic women and the number climbs to above 70%. Three things about drugs and AIDS that we have to understand are the degree to which we are not simply looking at an adult population that's getting ill, we're also talking about the creation of a critical mass. And what is that critical mass? That we won't produce enough healthy babies to survive into the next century. Babies who are born with fetal alcohol syndrome have a very poor chance of becoming good students and reaching adulthood as productive members of the workforce. Babies who are born with a heroin or a crack addiction are also very unlikely to progress, to develop, to thrive, or to do well in school. Babies who are born with an infection with the AIDS virus, HIV disease, are unlikely to make it past their seventh birthday. In a city like New York, which accounts for 23% of all AIDS cases in the United States, one has to wonder why the concentration is so heavy here. Why is the concentration so heavy amongst drug addicts? Drug addiction amongst blacks is uniform throughout the country. Why don't we see rates of disease uniformly distributed throughout the country? Why do we see such a heavy concentration here, most particularly in the South Bronx and in Harlem? Why is it that in Harlem in particular, in the 52 most poverty-stricken census tracts, the life expectancy for black males is 49 years, which is 5 years below that of the citizens of Bangladesh, a third world nation which is arguably one of the poorest on earth? Go back to the whole notion of the widespread belief that blacks feel themselves to be the victims of a conspiracy. I've just given you a string of evidence that supports that to a very heavy degree. Go back to the third point I made. Malcolm's point about self-sufficiency, excuse me. Why aren't we more pissed off? Why aren't we so angry? Why aren't we so afraid? Why are we acting like people who believe themselves to be victims of a conspiracy? Why is it that we have not shown the will to organize, to defend ourselves, to listen more closely, to attend more directly to the things that Malcolm spoke about so strongly in his speeches back in the 60s? That is why I speak as a psychiatric epidemiologist. We are talking about more than one thing here. I won't concentrate on the political aspects of this. I'm going to treat us all as community organizers who need to leave here believing that we must be self-sufficient, that it really is on us to heal what I'm describing as a series of very deep psychological wounds which have been inflicted on the community. What I've described is a pattern of psychic trauma. It has a name, post-traumatic stress disorder. We first talked about it when we talked about Vietnam veterans, people who came back from the war so traumatized that some of them live in the woods, completely unable to have contact with human beings, completely unable to interact, to have social intercourse with others. I want to submit to you that the manifestation of all the statistics, all the numbers, all the trends that you've heard the previous two speakers describe is a post-traumatic stress disorder, which leaves us frozen. We are very able to describe, we are articulate in our descriptions of how badly the community is faring, but we are really not really able to do very much more than describe ever more eloquently how despicable our plight is. One of the folk that I correspond with at Northwestern has suggested that when the bottom fell out of the economy in the black community, two things happened. The first was we lost the ability to provide for ourselves. We lost the ability to be independent. It is not just the fact that between 1960 and 1980, the proportion of employed black males in the black community of New York dropped from 78% to 55%. It's the simple fact that we live in an economy that is so complex that we simply cannot, with our own brown hands, rebuild the community. We are in a post-industrialized society that has become so complex that, unlike what you saw with the Pilgrims, who could deal with a thing like a tornado or a series of houses burning down by simply building more housing, we live in a society where the simple population pressures that allow us to exist in New York make it impossible for us to dash out here and with our own two hands build community housing for the black homeless. You see what I'm suggesting? I'm suggesting that we are facing a situation where our society has become so complex that people feel frozen, completely unable to act. They become passive. They are essentially sitting around waiting for the worst. Now, the issue is, how do you treat post-traumatic stress disorder? How do you treat the recognition that many black folk have that they face an uncertain future? We know what the past reaction has been. The past reaction can be described in two very simple ways. We either have become consumers of goods and services that are provided by the government. Since we can't take care of ourselves, we wish the government to take care of us. We just heard why that's a trap. Or we do what I think most young crack dealers have become. We become entrepreneurs. We become capitalists. We become capitalists taking advantage of the supply networks that are only too available for young entrepreneurs. What is so wonderful about crack? The fact that it not only is a highly addictive substance that produces a tremendous high, it has also been linked to sexual behavior. It is marketed as an aphrodisiac. So here you have two fundamental basic human needs being met: the need to escape from reality and the need to feed the sex drive, all being linked at the low, low price of just $3 a vial. Because we have lost the ability to be independent producers and to feel that we are in control of our fate, because we look to the very government that we believe is responsible for conspiring against our health and our safety, we are caught in a double bind. And what is the nature of a double bind? What does it produce? It produces helplessness. You can't go forward, you can't go backward. You simply sit and you rest. The most important thing about Malcolm was the fact that he lived in the 60s. We need to revive the 60s in one important way. The civil rights movement was not funded by the federal government. Remember? I mean, we actually did it without going to HRSA, to HUD, to HEW for funds to get people to register to vote, or to sit in at counters, or to do things that were a lot more militant and a lot more confrontative. We were actually able to do that. 20 to 30 years later, as we are living in communities that are awash with drugs, where homelessness is increasing at geometric levels, we really are going to have to talk to people about the nature of the situation that we're in. Let me suggest two things about the way we have been organizing politically that probably need to be rethought. First, it doesn't do much good to tell people how bad stuff is. They already know. They have figured this out. Any homeless person who's on the street would love to hear what you have to say about Malcolm, but he also wants you to give him a quarter when you're done, right? So the notion that we can educate politically the populace so that they become aware of the nature of their oppression and somehow use that knowledge to rise up just simply does not fly in the face of no about the diagnosis we've come up with as being typical of members of this community. You see what I'm saying? If we're going to organize, it's not enough to tell people how bad it is. What has to happen is people have to really begin to have faith that there is a future. Two things about that. What does it mean to have faith in the future? It's not being a politician who promises stuff that can't be delivered. It rather involves having people think about the degree to which they plan for a life that extends beyond tomorrow or next week or next month. And thirdly, it involves memorializing the trauma that the community has already gone through. Some of you had relatives who lived through or who died in Vietnam. Some of you have members of your families who have gone to the Vietnam Memorial and who've not only touched physically the name of somebody, a loved one who was lost. Some of you are from families that have left tokens, flowers, letters, books, personal belongings, medals. I don't think we really recognize the degree to which the creation of that monument has been a healing influence on people who suffer from Vietnamese-induced post-traumatic stress disorder. Do you know that one of the popular treatments we have for people, men who suffer from this disorder, is to send them to the memorial so that they can grieve for the community and so that in their grief they can get past it and go on with their lives? You see, the notion here is not to make people aware of their trouble. It's to allow them to grieve for what was. And in allowing them to grieve, also become reacquainted with their anger and their determination not to go down. I began by saying the thing that worries me most is the degree to which, having seen the data published in the paper, no one asked the question, geez, why aren't we more mad? I believe that that is a goal that can be achieved. I believe it is a goal that can be reached. But I believe it has to be reached by folk who, at an individual level, think about the way they target their messages. Let me end with this final note. In AIDS research, we have very clear, focused goals. We talk about getting people who are drug users to clean their works and not share them. And we try to get sexually active adults, whatever their sexual orientation, to use condoms. Those are very, how shall I say, modest kinds of things that we are trying to work on. The most interesting aspect of trying to work in this area is that it has taught us a great deal about the things that control behavior, because that's really what we want to do. We want to get people to change their behavior, something that's kind of new in modern science. Just one point to underscore that. I'd say that on the average, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, irrespective of race or social class, if you ask young people between the ages of 15 and 19 how frequently they use a condom, you're going to come up with an answer that's going to range between 23 and 30%. an amazing factor. One of the few numbers you can generate that doesn't depend on race and doesn't depend on how much money your parents make. What are we doing to try and change that behavior? One of the things we're doing is trying to point out to people what has happened to them. Not in terms of giving them facts that convince them that they are the victims of a conspiracy, but helping them to understand that there are ways of solving problems that used to be community-based that don't exist anymore. That the way we used to raise our kids was not to have one person be responsible for this youngster until the age of 21, but to have the extended family do everything from make sure that the kid got home to monitoring the kinds of friends the kid chose to making sure that the kid did homework. Because our community is in such a state of disarray, because it has suffered so much burnout and so much population migration, it has been very difficult for us to knit social networks. That's what has to happen again. One of the ways in which you reintegrate Vietnamese veterans into the life of the body politic, into the mainstream of the community, is to create support networks for them that go beyond the family. If their families don't exist anymore, they are no longer able to function with them, then some alternative kind of network has to be formed. I want to submit to you that we are in the business of trying to create community networks that are supportive of folk, that allow people to grieve for what's happened to the community, but don't let people stop with the grieving. That these networks be designed to have people go to the next step, which is to say, I grieve for this reason, and this is what I must do to get myself out of it. People have to be reminded that there was a time when the community was independent. They have to be reminded of the fact that there was a time when they didn't depend on the government. There was a time when they weren't consumers of services that came from state, municipal, or federal services. They have to be convinced that they have a future and that they are basically laying away. There was a time when they weren't consumers of services that came from state, municipal, or federal services. They have to be convinced that they have a future and that they are basically laying over and dying. This is not to blame the victim. This is simply to say that we have to tell the victim the way in which he or she has been victimized and use that knowledge in a way that is possible for them to become once again empowered. Thank you. Thank you.